Yom Kippur, my friends, compels honesty. So let's be honest about it. The Kol Nidre is a most improbable beginning to our holiest day. It is not a prayer. In thought, it is neither philosophic nor profound. It cannot even claim that its language has the grace of poetry. How is it then that a people whose genius runs to the spiritual is content with a rather flat legal form as the inaugural theme of this worship? The answer lies in the meanings within meanings of which language is capable. Take Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. It is something far more than a succinct and well-written graveyard dedicatory. It is the testament of a man, of a leader, who anguished to see his nation divided against itself, who refused to triumph in victory, and who asked only that his people be reunited in a common dedication to liberty and to the highest aspirations of brotherhood. It is the man and the occasion, especially the quality of the man, which establishes the immortality of language. And so it is with the Kol Nidre. The Kol Nidre reaches us back 1,000 years into the tears of our people. The Kol Nidre was written by an unknown sage, a member of a Spanish community, which was given the outrageous choice, apostasy or death. They chose to dissemble. They chose to dress as did the majority and to attend year-long the worship of the majority. But once a year, furtively, they climbed down the cellar stairs, they rapped with a secret password at the door, and they entered into the prayers of their people. The Kol Nidre was a sort of accrediting credential. It was spoken before the service began, and it said, "Our conversion was wrung from us. In our hearts, we have remained of Israel. Let us this night then be numbered again in Israel." And over the long centuries, other communities adrift and alone were forced to speak the Kol Nidre. And in time, the whole people adopted the Kol Nidre to our worship. They were one. One in the yellow badge. One in the Inquisition. One in the pogrom. One at Dachau. Their courage encouraged. And if we were of those fortunate enough not to be put to a supreme test, their courage demanded of us a higher quality of faith. The Kol Nidre speaks the language of the heart. The Kol Nidre demands of us this night that we knit close the ties of faith, the ties which bind us to our God and to our people. And the Kol Nidre stands as a symbol that the worship of Yom Kippur is written in the language of the heart, in feeling and in memory, in music and in fast, in discipline and in chant. The Kol Nidre demands that we become part of the worship, that we cease to be an audience and become a congregation caught up in the spirit, in the grip of this day. Have you ever tried to describe Yom Kippur to a stranger? I have spent time outlining the basic elements of a service, explaining the history of the grand hymns, the Kol Nidre and of the Asana Tokev, speaking of the whitened, unadorned altar, of the fast and of its meaning. And when I am done, I have the feeling that though I have described Yom Kippur fully, I have failed to describe Yom Kippur as it really is. For Yom Kippur is something more than a dusk-to-dusk fast, something more than a dusk-to-dusk worship. Yom Kippur is the Sabbath of Sabbaths. Yom Kippur is the sum of all of its rituals and of all of its prayers, or better yet, Yom Kippur is the impress of this day upon us. What makes the fast of Yom Kippur out of the ordinary? Those who are strangers to the fast think of it as an ordinary, rather prosaic denial. And indeed, logically, we do not need a fast to remind us that this day our thoughts are on matters spiritual and not worldly. But the fast unites us to 30 centuries of devotion. And how shall we explain this to a stranger? Why could not the basic themes of Yom Kippur be set out in one evening service? Why do we need a day-long liturgy? Logically, we do not. Indeed, logically, Yom Kippur can be set down in a few brief sentences. Here is its program. In the bustle of life, we often become confused. We lose sight of our goals, and sometimes we lose sight even of ourselves. It is a matter of prudence, therefore, and of wisdom, periodically to stop, to take stock, to ask ourselves if we are truly advancing in the directions which we desire. Kol Nidre reminds us, the Yom Kippur rather reminds us, that our failings not only dismay God, but they are a source of dismay to us. Let us therefore mark our sins, rectify them as far as is humanly possible. Let us be the better and the purer for this occasion. It is easily said, but if we set these thoughts down on paper, we may as well be writing in an invisible ink. For what separates, what distinguishes these lines from any of those periodic moments of self-awareness in which we resolve we will take ourselves finally in hand, improve the quality of our living, become the kind of person we always dreamed of? Where is the power of Yom Kippur? Where in these lines is the spiritual magnetism of the day which draws the household of Israel, the pious and then the uncertain, to worship? Where is the confidence which we brought tonight to this sanctuary that we could leave it tomorrow evening the cleaner, the better for this experience? The close things of life are best left undescribed. How would you describe love? How would you describe the touching of hands, the warming glance, the confidence of respect, the joy that wells up within, the pleasures shared which can never be explained to another? How will you explain love? Yom Kippur is of the near things of our faith, intimate to us. Perhaps we had better left it without description. But let me touch Yom Kippur, this spirit, this mood, this power, from another angle. Let me ask why it was that our fathers architected and sculpted this worship as they did in the language of the heart. Why were they not satisfied with a single evening of worship? Why were they not satisfied to set out the imperatives of our moral improvement simply and succinctly? You know, by nature, we are not a long-winded people. Our Psalms are a triumph of succinct piety. The Bible is a careful distillate of 1,000 years of religious creativity We are not a squirrel people. We are not afraid and have never been afraid of tossing aside the chaff. Why then the prolonged day-long worship? Because an evening's worship is not enough. Because this day we must listen with the heart to a service which speaks in the language of the heart. For Yom Kippur is not only a favorite annual devotion, it is a spiritual exercise of the highest order. Yom Kippur insists on a reorientation of our lives. Yom Kippur calls upon us to confront our persistent failings, our weakest of habits, and somehow to rechannel these in more wholesome direction. And our habits, our persistent failure, simply do not give in to the commands of reason, of logic. We have a triggered temper. We know what it means to blow up. Having vented our spleen, we know the meaning of remorse, the full ugliness of our anger. We counsel ourselves that we will bridle our irascibility. And we do. For a day or two. And then some stupidity, some carelessness brings the flush of blood again to our cheeks and we erupt. Our habits simply do not surrender to reason. Here is an easygoing, lackadaisical fellow. He promises himself tonight that he will finally make something of his life. He will be up and at it. How many times has he promised this to himself before? How many times has he settled back into the old comfortable habits? Need I remind you that Americans smoke more today than they did before the Surgeon General's report? We simply do not listen, even to our own best advice. Our habits are in the power of our will, of our heart, and we change our habits only when we have a change of heart. What moves the heart? What causes us finally to take ourselves in hand and to say, I will change and to mean it? Tragedy. Tragedy touches the heart. Many of those who were soldiers at Dachau opened the gates and saw the horror within became in that instant finer men. Their lives took on new direction. Volunteers suddenly confronted with raw pain or empty loneliness know in that instant a new dimension of responsibility. The Yizkor service, the memorial service of Yom Kippur, is not an unwarranted intrusion on this day of stock-taking. Rather, it is carefully placed, for memory compels. A life left incomplete, and what life is not left incomplete demands that we continue, make our own the responsibility. And how many children have suddenly matured when the yoke was placed upon their shoulders? They become different people, themselves, but older, themselves, but wiser, themselves, but more delicate. Tragedy touches the heart. So does love. Love suddenly alerts us to the world without. We are no longer aliens. We are part of the passion of living, of family, of civilization. We are the gentler and the more generous of spirit, more sympathetic, more aware of feeling. Love touches the heart. Love changes our ways of life. Tragedy and love, courage and sacrifice, awe and reverence, yes, even fear. These touch and move the heart, and these are all elements in this service on Yom Kippur. Our fathers called this day Yom Ayum V'Norah, the day of fear and trembling. They felt themselves this day under a divine judgment for life and for death. We sense this day's holiness. We know it to be a day set apart. We know that it speaks to us in the language of the heart, that our hearts can be touched and can be moved, and that we can be improved. Yom Kippur speaks with the language of the heart. Let me then, rather than speak to you in a thematic skeletal form of the basic themes of Yom Kippur, speak to you rather from the heart. Let me tell you what Yom Kippur means to me, the feelings it evokes within. Perhaps you will catch an echo of your own reaction. I cannot come to Yom Kippur except to know its uniqueness. The Bible calls this day the Sabbath of Sabbaths. We call it the High Holiday. The words matter not. It is a day apart. What makes it so? I do not know. Perhaps it is the thronging of the congregation. Perhaps it is the reverence of the centuries. Perhaps it is the force of a truly majestic liturgy. Perhaps it is a simple act of denial implied in the fast. Perhaps it is these, one or all. But Yom Kippur bespeaks its own holiness. And I do not seek to separate out the parts. I am only grateful for its significance. For Yom Kippur says to me, I know that you do not set great store by changes of personality, that you have resolved and seen your resolutions slip away. But to now you, this night, somehow, you will be buoyed up, encouraged. The spirit of Yom Kippur is with you. It will bind to you the more firmly your promises, your pledges. And is it not true that that which we believe to be significant becomes significant? On Yom Kippur, in the days of the ancient temple, the high priest had two ordinary goats brought before him. One he set aside as a sacrifice to God. On the head of the other, he put his hands, and he symbolically placed upon the head of that goat the guilt of the people. The goat was then driven out of the confines of the temple, out of the gates of Jerusalem, and into the howling wilderness. Now, our fathers were not naive nor simple men. They did not really believe that the goat carried out with it the sins of the people. But they did know that on Yom Kippur they felt cleansed and purified, renewed. Here was the symbolic expression of this renewal, this freedom, this breaking of the chains. That which we believe to be significant is significant. And I am grateful for the otherness, the holiness of this day. And as I feel the special quality of Yom Kippur, so on Yom Kippur I feel a special calm. In some ways this is passing strange. Yom Kippur is the night of the whole congregation. The temples are thronged. Yet tonight, in the temple, I am alone. I often feel when I walk into the congregation at Yom Kippur night that I am walking into myself. I do not know really why. Perhaps it is the calm, introspective, minor-keyed music which accompanies our worship. Perhaps it is that I know that as the day draws on, my mind will cease to wander back to my desk and to my calendar. The walls will shut out the noise and distraction of my daily life. And I will be alone alone with myself. Perhaps it is that on Yom Kippur I am with those whom I know and respect, and I lose a sense of being up for show, singled out. Those whom I respect stand with me and speak the words of confession. They too feel themselves awkward before the standard of God's measurement. They too know the meaning of stumbling and of failure. And as they are busy with their thoughts, so I am busy with mine. I am no longer ashamed. I am no longer alone, set apart. And not being alone, I find that I can shrug off on Yom Kippur all pride. You know, it is our way the year long to put our best foot forward, to put a bold face on it, and it is wise and it is prudent that we do so. Otherwise, we could not go it in life. But sometimes our confidence and our pride encases us, envelops us, so that we do not hear the promptings of the conscience, blinds us to the inner life within. On Yom Kippur, I find that I can shrug off of my shoulders the mantle of pride. On Yom Kippur, I find that I can come to myself without stumbling over 1,000 invented excuses and rationalizations. I am alone with myself and my God. There is no shame in confession. God knows my sins before I utter them. And all who are with me this night share the imperfections of mortality. And as the confession is repeated once, and twice, then thrice, I find that I can easily read myself into each of its terms. You know, each of us has a favorite sin, some terrible, whopping lie from our childhood, some evil from our distant past, which whenever we become awkward at a moment of confession, we trot it out. We repeat it. We've repeated it 12 years and more, but it blinds us to the near reality. It blinds us to an awareness of the sins of the moment, of last year and last month and of yesterday. I forget this favorite sin of mine on Yom Kippur, and I come to see the gray spots of my life as I now lead it. The compromises that need not have been made, the confidences that need not have been exchanged, the friendships offered which could not be cultivated, the carelessness which need not have been practiced. I see my life as it truly is. I find on Yom Kippur that confession comes easily. And I often ask myself why. Year long, I am tied up within myself. I see myself only in the best of possible lights. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all? We are. But tonight, I see myself, at least partially, as God must see me. I do not find the words of admission difficult. Is it that I know that I will not be bogged down, be calmed in a sea of remorse? Perhaps. Truly, it is welcome that at the very beginning of our worship, before a single act of contrition has been asked of us, God's promise is written large. Vayomer Adonai, Salachti ki barecha. God said, I have forgiven you according to your request. God desires not the death of the sinner, but that he repent him of the evil of his ways and that he live. And what is our Torah portion of tomorrow morning? See, I have set before thee this day the blessing and the curse, life and death. Choose ye life. The shofar I know will sound tomorrow dusk. I will be reunited with God, reunited with my life, renewed I know that if I take the returning road, God will meet me more than halfway. Vetzeti likraticha, likrati, vetzaticha. And as I went out to meet thee, I found thee coming my way. The way back is a long way. We shy from the moments of apology and of admission, from the hard truths kept secret which must now be revealed. Year-long, we are afraid to reveal ourselves. Tonight we find the strength. Vetzeti likraticha, likrati, vetzaticha. The way back is a long way. Year-long, we put off. We procrastinate. We say, there will yet be time for the visit I propose, for the service I would tender. Year-long we live with the illusion of our immortality. We deny to ourselves that we cannot even assure us of tomorrow. Tonight, I can face my mortality. I know that the time for change is now. But say, ti likraticha, likrati, mitzaticha. The way back is a long way. New disciplines must be found. Pleasures and indulgences must be set aside. I must find somehow within me a continuing strength so that when the petty word, the feeble gesture comes to mind, I put it aside so that I can bridle my anger or my excess. Tonight I know that somehow I will find the strength. I would say, ti likraticha, likrati, vetzaticha. The way back is a long way. Tonight my heart has been tender and open. I hear the language of Yom Kippur. I feel a new freedom, a strengthening, a new confidence. Feel the cleaner. The new year dawns. I feel that I will somehow within it find a new life. So we'd say, ti likraticha, likrati mitzaticha. When I went out to meet thee, I found thee coming my way. So this night, what more can I say or do but to bless God for the power, for the thrust of Yom Kippur. Praised art thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has given us this day of atonement, a day of fear and of trembling, yet with it all, a day of richest blessing.